south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, here's an email. It says, Johnny, I am right now starting my Plan B. About time, huh? Been thinking about it a long time, but I'm a procrastinator. So, Johnny, why now and not earlier? Well, that's because I've lost three very important things in my life that I thought were guaranteed. That is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Can't do that anymore where I live. That's up in Cincinnati. Just wanted to let you know, when you start losing your so-called freedoms and rights guaranteed by the, quote, U.S. Constitution, time to go, even for us dyed-in-the-wool procrastinators. Even if you have to leave the country of your birth, kicking and screaming. That's about the size of it, Johnny. So I'll be coming down. I'm on my way. Hopefully we can meet up sometime. I'll buy you a cup of coffee. All right, that was from Sammy in Cincinnati. My question for you, Sammy, is only a cup of coffee, you tightwad? Aside from that, hey, did you know, Sammy, and everyone else out there, in the original Declaration of Independence, which was written and rewritten a couple of different times before it got in the hands of the press and the public, and of course, the main author being Thomas Jefferson and a couple of the other dead, liberty-minded, intellectual colonials who were on that committee. Yeah, they had a committee. Anyway, in one of the first drafts of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson wrote, "We all have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of property, not happiness." And he'd stolen that from the British philosopher John Locke, who had written a previous treatise saying everyone is born with the unalienable right. That's unalienable, not unalienable, right? To life, liberty, and the pursuit of estate. And back then, estate, and I suppose today too, means property, as in estate taxes. But after the first and second drafts of the Declaration of Independence, before it got out in public, the committee putting it together changed it to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness instead of property, or estate, as John Locke pointed out. Which begs the question, if they would have left the property business in there instead of the happiness bit, don't you think that would have been a great sucker punch to every socialist or would-be socialist or neo-socialist, like, for example, Bernie Sanders? Since, by all accounts, intellectuals the world over say the Declaration of Independence is one of the top five greatest documents of all time. Right up there with the Bible, the Magna Carta, and the Napoleonic Codes. Funny how the Quran never made it to the top 10 list. You ever read it? If you did, you'd see why. Oh, and by the way, that book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, didn't make the cut either, nor did any of the Harry Potter books. And The Rock's autobiography? No dice on that either. Tisk, tisk, what a shame. Anyway, to my mind, I'm thinking the pursuit of happiness, man, that doesn't sit too well. I'd say it's the pursuit of life, liberty, and the avoidance of boredom. Makes a lot more sense to me, because to have happiness, you got to have unhappiness, or you wouldn't know the difference. So it stands to reason. If you were happy all the time, that would be your normal state, and thus you wouldn't really be happy at all, because happiness is generally defined as an extraordinarily exuberant state. Hey, I know it's not in the Declaration, but pursuing the avoidance of boredom should be a human right. And when you get down to the nitty-gritty, that's what almost every single gringo expat who's on that Plan B path really seems to be in tune with, though it's mostly unstated. And you know, it's also true that practically every single expat that I've ever met is above average. And many of them kind of scary above average. Hey, how'd that happen? Meaning they think more than the average slug, and thinking people, as a rule, know how to occupy their time. That's to say, in meaningful ways. Why? Because their minds are very active and they hate boredom. Oh, it's true. Average and below average people get bored too. But to fill the gaps, they prefer to be entertained, which is a passive experience. For example, becoming addicted to social media or TV shows like The Retard Assians. So as for me, and I see this with so many expats and gringos down here, it's life, liberty, and not the pursuit of property or happiness, but the pursuit of new and better experiences, all in the effort to avoid boredom. And man, I'll tell you, the definition of boredom is living a life on that first world treadmill. By the way, how's your treadmill coming? Speaking of jumping off, one way to get much more than a snapshot glimpse of what it's like to live the good life here on the other side in Latin America is to sign up for my Expat Insider Seminar. We shove off in about 2 weeks, so there's still time to get on board. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's seminar link, and read all about it. By the way, I get emails all the time from people saying, Johnny, I can't make this seminar. I'm coming to the next one or the one after that. Well, you listeners have heard me say this before. The seminars won't last forever. I'm not going to last forever. The truth is, every seminar that I do could very well be my last, depending on when that big first world meltdown comes, and it is coming. So what's going to be the trigger? War? Terrorism? A massive hacker attack? Taking down every ATM machine? Will it be a currency, derivative, bank, or stock market crash? Hey, take your pick. There are dozens of tipping points and dominoes waiting to fall. And what about all those bubbles? Housing, stock market, student loan, credit card debt, car loan? They're all looking for pins, you know? And to be brutally honest, if you've been paying attention to the real smart heavy hitters, almost no one in the alternative media thinks the current system will last another 6 months. How about that? You know the media is bought and sold, and they're paid to put on a happy face as the lemmings march to the sea. And you know, these days, everyone you speak to who's got a half a brain will tell you, it doesn't feel right. Something's got to give. And you know, on my end, as one really smart expat told me just the other day, he said, you know, when I wake up in the morning, turn on my computer, it's as if I'm ready for the worst possible news. And when it comes, I won't even be surprised. In fact, he said, you know, I've already factored that into my life, that there's going to be a real earth-shattering event, a big blowout. It's going to start up in the first world. Luckily, he said, I'm here in Latin America now. So bring it on. I'm ready for it. All right, good for him. But what about everybody else? The people who are thinking about Plan Bs or just starting on their Plan Bs. Where does that leave them? Depends on how far along you are. Here's a question for you. Have you got any of your assets out of the country yet? Because when those dominoes fall, good luck trying to liquidate and move things around. Now, as things start to crumble fast, you should be able to get your ass out of the country. At least in the beginning, for a while anyway. But what good is that if you can't get your assets out? I hope you've been thinking about that. All right, on that bleak note, let's talk a little bit about people coming down to Latin America who, once they're down here, need to make money. That fits right in with the scenario of being able to get your ass out, but not your assets. Then you will need to do some kind of business or find some kind of work. Now, you longtime listeners to this show know that with a little preparation, a little planning, there are some ways to start making money here in Latin America almost immediately. You've heard me talk about call centers. Yeah, they're dying for real first world English speakers, so those jobs are very easy to come by. But know that most call centers will not hire you unless you've got or applied for residency. Why? Because they have to put you on the books as an employee. And if you don't have residency, you have no permission to work in the country. You get it? Reason number 1,426, why you really have to apply for temporary or permanent residency in a Latin country now. By the way, if you have your own internet or brick and mortar business, you don't need a work permit or residency because in that case, you're the owner. You can hire others all day long, but you just can't hire yourself, which doesn't matter. It's just a technicality because the money's going into your bank account, so it's yours. Oh, and now for method number 2, how to make money pretty much instantly once you get down. If you've got any kind of college degree at all, you could work at one of the K-12 helicopter schools. But then again, if you work for a call center or as a teacher, you're working for the man again, aren't you? And the pay? Well, for starters, it'll average anywhere from $400 to $800 a month. Not much, but you can live on that down here, better than a backpacker anyway. And you can work your way up. Now, some people say the best instant way to make money once you get down here is to teach English online to Chinese kids. In fact, at my upcoming Expat Insider Seminar, Mr. B will be telling you his experiences, and he's the expert. That said, he just sent me this email. Listen up. Hey, Johnny, there have been some changes in China's new law for people who want to teach English to Chinese people online. My company, and there are a couple of different ones, have now started asking for everybody's credentials and doing background checks. So far, they haven't any problem with me, even though I have just a GED. All right, me, Johnny, just a comment. If you recall Mr. B's last communications with us, he said he was worried he wouldn't be able to get that job because he didn't have a college degree. He only had a GED. Well, when he told them that, they said that's not necessarily a problem. But they had to vet him out, and they wanted a face-to-face interview. So he said he spiffed up, put on a clean shirt and a tie, and did the interview. And he passed with flying colors. Now, let me repeat, he only has a GED. Oh, and remember, you heard me say he makes over $18 an hour, sometimes double that. Oh, and though he says he loves the job, he's really his own boss, you know. The hours are practically the only thing about the job that really sucks. But you get used to it. It's generally from 4 in the morning to 9 a.m., kind of like third shift hours up in the States. That's because China's on the other side of the world and there's a half a day time differential. So you're teaching Chinese kids when they get home from their regular day school. Anyway, Mr. B goes on to say, so far they haven't had a problem with me just having a GED, but just in case, I've started getting my TESOL. That stands for Teaching English as a Foreign Language. It's an internationally accredited test you take to prove that you're fluent in the English language. Then he says, you know, Johnny, I started with training up for my TESOL free through my company because I'm over 6 months of employment with them. And they offer that option. I have to tell you that I love this profession because it's massively convenient. And it pays very well. And I think it's worth getting that TESOL certificate, especially if you don't have a college degree. Then he sent me a link to the English version of the ChinaDailyNews.com. It says, all online training institutes for primary and middle school students are now required to submit class names, training content, schedules, and class hours to provincial education authorities. That's a new directive from the Chinese Ministry of Education. It says, from now on, the names, photos, schedules, and credentials of teachers will be visibly placed on the institution's websites. And it says, in addition, education authorities nationwide will also accept complaints from the public about after-school programs via the platform and will blacklist poorly managed institutes. Then it says, Chinese parents have become more and more accepting of online after-school English tutoring. China's online education market is on a high growth curve and expected to experience a growth of exceeding $100 billion a year by 2025. All right, then in a follow-up email Mr. B just sent, he says, Johnny, there's more. China is now asking for teachers who teach in China to have one of those TESOLs, that's Teaching English as a Second Language, etc. However, he says, even if you don't have a college degree, you can teach English to people all over the world through these companies, including, for example, India, Russia, Africa, France, and do it without a TESOL certificate or any experience at all. He says, I'll explain all of that, of course, when I give my little overview at your Expat Insider Seminar in January. Then he says, not only that, I'll offer my services via Skype to help your seminar attendees and show listeners to decide, number one, who they want to teach English to. Number two, to help them get a TESOL if they desire one or need one. By the way, he says, my company doesn't care where you get your TESOL certificate from as long as you get one. And he says, there are lots of ways to do that. Wink, wink. Number three, I'll show them a video of me teaching in a real classroom setting. And number four, I'll help them decide whether they want to teach kids or adults and more. All right, thanks for that, Mr. B, and we'll see you at the seminar in a couple of weeks. All right, there you have it, another way to make quick money if you need to once you land here in Latin America. In fact, it's pretty big money, relatively speaking, of course, $18 plus dollars an hour. Meanwhile, the minimum wage here in Latin America is well under 18 bucks a day. But you knew that already, right? Then we have this email from Bob, who's living in the Mexican Altiplano. He says, hola, Johnny. You had a great analysis breakdown on your last show regarding the immigrant caravans' true motivations for pushing ahead on through to the States. All right, me, Johnny, here with a comment. You know, the reason why I'm reading this email is because he's right in the thick of the caravan that's pushing up north. He and his wife have a ringside seat, so you have to value and weigh his opinion a lot more than the bilge coming from reporters who are only down on the scene for a day or two, just looking for shocking photos and sound bites that'll look good on the 6 o'clock news. You know what they say, if it bleeds, it leads. Anyway, he says, Johnny, I'd like to add a couple of things on top of what you said on your recent show about those caravans coming on through to the U.S. First, let's talk about the NGOs. You see, it's like this. When the NGOs, that's the non-governmental organizations, the do-gooders, they come in firing up the locals, telling them they've got security in numbers. They give them speeches telling them they've got the human right to migrate. Then you've got those NGOs and do-gooders offering up some supporting cash and other freebies as well. All that does, he says, is light a fire under a huge number of fence-sitting young high-test dudes who look at joining such a caravan as pure adventure. Then he says you have to toss into the mix middle-aged shattered dreamers as well. Don't forget, there are some pregnant women too, ready to drop a baby in the dirt 50 yards north of the border, which has actually happened at least once in that caravan already. Now that anchor baby thing, all Latinos know about that, and it's a huge motivator. Since if you can pull that off, mom and dad and the rest of the sisters and brothers get a free pass too. Then he says there's those gay folks, let's not forget about them, looking for a supposedly less oppressive lifestyle in Daddy Yankee Land. Then you've got Uncle Mario, or many Uncle Marios, who can't get first world medical treatment in Honduras for their cancer. So why not join the caravan? Add all that up and it's game on, and to reach your goal, you break every rule you can. Oh, and don't forget, who knows how much the U.S. State Department and military regional meddling in Central and South America have contributed to the problem, and on what scale? It's something we'll never know. Meanwhile, all the strapping young dudes are hurtling north in quest of that 50-inch flat-screen TV, seeking out the good life that was never attainable back home. But it's more than possible up in the land of sports, conspicuous consumption, and debt. Yours truly, Expat Bob from Oaxaca. All right, that from Bob on the front lines, watching that caravan rolling on through. He's right, you know, especially those foggy-eyed NGO do-gooders. You can always spot them. They're way too nice, way too white, and they all have matching t-shirts. They come down here by the thousands, usually for a week or two, like worker ants. All with good, even great intentions, especially the grunt workers who are handing out freebies, like high-tech water filters that never get serviced so they clog in a month, and solar outhouses for Jesus that never get cleaned. Then, a couple of weeks later, as that feel-good, do-unto-others thing wears off, they're back at the mall shopping, having their nails gelished, coffee clutching it, and doing the health club thing. Though they've gained some brownie points with the man upstairs, or so they think. You know, you have to be down here a long time to realize the damage these people do. Because, you see, part of their mission is also political, to get on a soapbox and lecture the poor, sweaty masses about their human rights and what their government owes them, and to inform them about what they don't have and what they deserve. They teach them how to organize, picket, hold sit-ins. They give them tips on how to protest anything and everything. In the end, they do much more harm than good, which is why I advise you, never give a single dime to any organized charity at all. If you're going to come down here to Latin America and help the poor out of their bad situation, come down on your own accord and find someone or some family you could help face-to-face, one-on-one. Because I'm telling you right now, and I can prove it in 100 ways, the do-gooders do no good. In a nutshell, the do-gooders on the ground have a hive mentality, and they're not thinking it through. They're not looking ahead at the negative secondary effects. Meanwhile, the organizers, the leaders, the administrators of those NGOs are flying first class and staying at four-star resort hotels. People have heard of all the scandals, but they still keep giving. Then again, they still keep voting for Democrats and Republicans, too. Duh. All right, moving on. Since we talk a lot about healthcare here in Latin America, I don't like to talk about medical tourism. That sounds schlocky, doesn't it? Tourism, attached to the word medical. To me, there's something unholy about that. By the way, there are lots of medical tourism agencies and companies. Just go online. You find them all over Latin America, and most of them are based up in the States. They'll hook it up for you, send you down, give you a package, stay in a hotel, and all that stuff. To tell you the truth, I don't trust those agencies either. You got to wonder, how are they making their money? They're making their cut along the way somewhere. And you better believe they're getting a first world slice of the pie, too. Yeah, I've checked out some of these sites. They're all so glossy and so professional. In English, YouTubes, videos, testimonials. Something just ain't right. I mean, look, suppose you fly into Guadalajara, have a nose job or a boob job. You're in and out in a couple of days and you're back home. But there's really no follow-up, which is why I wrote a 100-plus page report called Healthcare in Latin America. How to get first world medical care at third world crisis. It's not a report on how to fly in for a weekend, get something done, and go back to Cleveland. It's about finding the best doctors, hospitals, clinics, and insurance policies once you land down here in Latin America and get that plan B going. In fact, it's a big part of having a plan B. It's what you'll need to know about Latin healthcare and insurance, whether you choose to live in Latin America full or part-time. Which brings us to this email. It says, "Hiya, Johnny. The average price of a pair of custom-fitted hearing aids up here in the States is around $4,700. And of course, the cost for the emergency room treatment after you see the bill and have your heart attack. My question is, Johnny, how much would that cost me if I had it done in a nice first-world clinic there in Latin America?" And that comes from Bob, a previous seminar attendee. All right, one thing we always have to keep in mind is that any devices, prosthesis, or first world tech that get implanted on or in your body, like hearing aids, joint replacements, pacemakers, boobs, whatever, you'll find the price of the tech will cost the same as the identical items up in the States. What you're saving the big bucks on, though, is the doc, the personnel, the facilities, the hospital, and the clinic fees. So, for example, if the hearing aid coming from the US, Europe, or China, or whatever, is $1,500, you'll have to pay that wherever you have it done. However, the doc, the personnel, the staff, and the clinic fees will probably be around $500, a quarter to a sixth of what you'd have to pay up in the States. A really good example, boob jobs. They do tons of them down here, especially in Argentina, Colombia, Brazil, and Panama. And the average fee, if you go to a top-notch plastic or cosmetic surgeon, about $2,500 to $3,000, with about half of that cost being the implants themselves. And the high-quality ones with the guarantees are coming from first-world countries like the U.S., Canada, and Europe. And now the Chinese are cranking that stuff out, too. But man, I should say, ladies, is it worth it to save a few $100? I don't think so. All right, let's talk about a boob job in Bogota, Colombia. Average high-end price, $3,000. $1,500 for the prosthesis, $1,500 for everything else. The doc, anesthesiologist, hospital stay, whatever. Meanwhile, back in Cleveland, the average price for a boob job? $6,000. But you say, wait a minute, it's supposed to be a quarter to a sixth of the U.S. price if you have it done in Latin America. But it appears to be only 50% less. $6,000 in Cleveland versus $3,000 in Colombia. Problem is, you see, cost of the prosthesis. In the States, same prosthesis, $1,500, meaning the labor and the overhead, surgeon, anesthesiologist, hospital or clinic stay, $4,500, versus, as mentioned, $1,500 in Bogota, Colombia. So the numbers really do hash out. If you figure everything but the cost of the prosthesis for the actual procedure and everything that goes with it, you'll see in Colombia it's a quarter of what it'll cost in the States. Enough said about that. All right, how about a real-life boots-on-the-ground hospital story? Here's an email. Came in just 3 days ago. Comes from Mr. D, who attended my Expat Insider seminar and came back as a repeat offender too. And here's what he writes. "Dear Johnny, came back down to Guatemala last week. What an experience. It was a short trip back to basically finalize my residency. Fingerprints, photos at immigration and all that. Got it all done in a day and a half in the city and decided to go to Antigua. But first we went to Cayala to go skating. Yep, they've got winter skating there. Good thing we did too, because around 5 p.m. I felt a pain in my lower back. I've had exactly one kidney stone back in 2002. But boy, do you instantly remember that pain. So I went straight to the hospital. Once there, they immediately gave me an IV of pain meds and saline. Worked up a medical history, chest x-ray, EKG, many blood tests, then gave me a 4D MRI at the very hospital we toured at the seminar. Turned out, I had an 11-millimeter kidney stone blocking 98% of my left kidney. Yes, this is absolutely life-threatening, not to mention excruciatingly painful. I had the urologist schedule the surgery, which would have been immediate had I not just eaten, so they gave me 8 hours to sit it out. Then, under general anesthetic, they inserted a laser into my urethra and basically played asteroids in there, breaking the stone into smaller and smaller pieces, then performing another round of scans. They fleshed most of it out during the procedure, but a half a dozen or so fragments, the much smaller ones, had to be passed naturally. Still, significantly painful, but nowhere near as bad. Next day, it was bag after bag of saline IV drip with antibiotics and painkillers, and then we finally flew back, only to hit another glitch. There was a big ice and snowstorm in the States. Flights from Houston on all the airlines were canceled for 2.5 days. So we rented a car. I was popping painkillers and pissing blood as we made the 14-hour drive. I still haven't passed all the fragments, but basically I was very, very lucky to have stayed in Guatemala City at a total cost for 3.5 days in the hospital in an executive private room, all the scans, MRIs, procedures, everything, and with basically a dedicated team immediately responsive to everything I needed for, are you ready for this? Just slightly over $7,000. All right, me, Johnny, here again. I'm trying to look at what that would cost up in the States. So I found this. A report from a guy who went to his emergency room in California, had his blood work done, CBC, chemical profiling, several urine tests, cultures, 2 CT scans and MRI, a visit by a urologist, and 2 primary care visits, prescriptions for antibiotics and Flomax, and a lab analysis of his kidney stone. It was one day in the emergency room, no overnight stay. It cost $16,130. All right, in the end, Mr. D says, in the U.S., try to get a hospital alone, forget any of the tests and procedures, for just a night at that rate. Just thought I'd let you know, Johnny. By the way, Mr. D, my father once said there were only 3 things that could make him cry. The death of a loved one, a kidney stone, and a direct kick in the balls. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.